Pleased now to be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch. He usually joins us on Monday, had some scheduling conflict. We moved it to Wednesday. Doc Punch's appearance is brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist located in the suburban center. Doc, I went by last week to get me some new Balance shoes, and I know you enjoy wearing New Balance.
I absolutely do, Jimmy and Vince. You know, I wear them all the time. I've got them on right now. I was in Florida over the weekend for an appearance and went by to see Mickey and Minnie. They said to tell you hello, by the way. And I wore my New Balances down there and loved every minute of it, enjoyed it. You talk about an easy stop to get new shoes.
Nice.
That's New Balance of Knoxville there and the Suburban Shopping Center. You know, Sharon, David, all the wonderful staff will take great care of you. You walk in and you become family. They know who you are. They know what you like. They have multiple sizes, shapes, colors, styles, and as well as apparel. So we appreciate their involvement in our show each and every week, normally on Mondays, today on a Wednesday. But they are so supportive of what we do here for Sports Talk and also in the community. They give back in a lot of ways to community efforts and events and fundraisers. So, but if you want a great shoe, you want to feel comfortable and be able to, in whatever activity you choose, then stop by and see the folks at New Balance of Knoxville.
So, Kurt Busch wins at Kansas. Kurt Busch has won with four different manufacturers. He has won with five different teams. He has won on 18 different tracks. He's now got at least one win in 19 different seasons, 34 total cup wins. That passes Fireball Roberts for 25th all time. Just talk a little bit about Kurt Busch.
Well, I was happy for Kurt to get that win. When you get into the twilight of your career or late in, you know, you don't know. And Kurt, like many of these drivers, really don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. I think it was a good move by Denny Hamlin to bring him over to 2311 Racing, their new team that he shared with Michael Jordan. And I think Denny Hamlin might have been even happier than Kurt was to be able to see him get into victory lane. It was it's a mile and a half racetrack. Weather was an issue off and on throughout the day. Wind is a big problem in Kansas, as always. And so I think that, you know, he ran well. They were smart from a pit stop standpoint. He drove a flawless race pretty much overall. Kyle Larson was also really good out there, and so was Kyle Busch. It was a good day for the Busch brothers. But a great day for Kurt. And I had just spent some time with Kurt when I was at Darlington a week ago. We talked a little bit. And you can really tell, you start thinking as you get along in life. And I think that it was a good move for him to be able to get to victory lane and know he's going to be in the playoffs this year. Of course, you never know what tomorrow brings. And you never know if you're going to get to victory lane again. Like Jimmy Johnson always said, I want a bunch of them, but I always wanted to cherish this one today because you don't know if you're ever going to get back here. And certainly Kurt Busch did that at Kansas last week.
He won it in the number 45 car. And, Doc, they had to get permission from the Petty family to do so. The 45 car had not been on victory lane since 1964. Talk a little bit about the background of that story.
Yeah, well, that was Adam Petty's car. And remember, the Petty's had 42 and 43, and then they had a 44 car. You know, it was Lee Petty and Richard Petty and then Kyle. And this was the Adam Petty number that he'd been running. And obviously Adam lost his life, and it was an anniversary of such, if you want to call the tragic loss of life from a young, incredibly talented young driver this past week. And everyone was talking about how it's hard to believe that it's been so long since we lost Adam, who was killed in a practice crash at New Hampshire, and it's just one of those things where to this day the story is gut-wrenching. I was in the airport on my way to fly to New Hampshire when I heard about the crash and the practice, and his mother was actually at home in Greensboro, but she was out shopping. His dad and sister were at a horse show in England, and they contacted his dad, Kyle Petty, to tell him in the airport in England that Adam had lost his life. Adam had been killed in a car in the crash there at the racetrack. And he had to get on the flight with his daughter, who was talking about she couldn't wait to get home and tell Adam about the horse show and this, and pretend that nothing had happened, which had to be gut-wrenching for him, knowing that he had lost his son and not wanting his daughter to find out until he could get her home with where he and his wife, her mom, could tell her together. So And for that, for the pain of all that to still linger and last, I'm sure as it does when you lose a child, and then to have the 45 car go back to Victory Lane, had to be pretty special for them. So not only was it a great day for Kyle, but a great day to remember Adam Petty, who was really going to be a star in this sport, both on and off the track. Personality plus, this kid was. But pretty special day in Kansas for lots of reasons.
Yep. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our first caller. Jim, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
Hey, Jim.
Good afternoon, Doc. You know, we're just 11 days till the greatest spectacle in racing.
And I know.
It's just an exciting time of the year. I was thinking the other day, this year just happens to be the 40th anniversary of my one and only trip to Indy to see the Indy 500, 1982. And, you know, it was a race that started with a crash before they ever got the green flag to start it. It ended with the closest race in the history of Indy at that time, with John Cock over Rick Mears by 16/100ths of a second. That's how close Rick Mears is to being the only five-time winner. But I was thinking of all the great drivers, and obviously there's a NASCAR Hall of Fame, which you're obviously involved in. There's a Motorsports Hall of Fame, but then I decided to go to the Indy Hall of Fame, and I can't find any. Is there not an Indy Hall of Fame, and has there ever been discussion to have one?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. I know there are museums, multiple museums at Indianapolis Motor Speedway being the foremost of those, and there's an International Motorsports Hall of Fame that has many open wheel. It has Formula One, IndyCar drivers, et cetera. There are several different. I'm not aware. Quite honestly, Jim, I've never been asked that question. I'm not aware that there is a specifically an IndyCar Hall of Fame. There are some smaller museums, and there's one out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that features the Unser family. And I'm trying to think where else I've heard. But as far as one specific, and there should be an IndyCar. I don't know if it should be IndyCar or, but there is an Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you know, museum which has its own Hall of Fame there inside and some special, but it's not specific to IndyCar. It still has stock cars and other cars in there as well.
Yeah.
So you know, you're right. I don't think there is.
Well, there are Indy car drivers in other Hall of Fames, as you say, including the Motorsports Hall of Fame. But I'm thinking that there is not a Hall of Fame dedicated strictly to IndyCar open wheel racing, IndyCar racing, which kind of shocked me. And I didn't know if there had ever been one contemplated or what, but I was very surprised at that. Let me ask you one last thing. In that 82 race that I went to, ABC wasn't doing the live broadcasts as yet. They were still doing the same day tape delay, and they would show the edited version at night. And Jim McKay was doing the broadcast. And Sam Posey happened to be doing the commentary for that race. Did you, in your early days at Indy, did you know Sam Posey? Did you work with him at all, ever?
I absolutely did in both those. I got to know Sam very well. I worked with Sam Posey probably for the first 7 or 8 years I did the Indianapolis 500.
Okay. Yeah.
And what a quality guy. I mean, he was a straight-up. You know, Sam was as honest and open as you could be, and he was very self-deprecating in terms of his abilities as an announcer, but I thought he did a really nice job. He and Bobby Unser were always at each other's throat, although Sam was so polite and Bobby was so caustic at times. And every time, and it would be when I was doing the race as a pit reporter, you could hear even during commercials, Sam Posey would make comments and Bobby would disagree. And I remember so many times on the first show, I'd never heard announcers disagree on not only on national television, but on worldwide television. But Sam Posey would say, hey, you know, what's happening here is Floyd is doing so-and-so. Hunter would come back, Sam, you're dead wrong. You're dead wrong, Sam. That typical Bobby Unser twang. And we would laugh so hard. Oh, my gosh. We'd go to dinner at night, and every time Posey would order, I expected to hear Unser say, you ordered the wrong thing, Sam. You know, but it was those guys were so funny and so much fun to be around. But, yeah, I'm going to say that ABC carried the Indianapolis 500 for 54 consecutive years, but that was not back when it was live. I did 27 of those 54, but every one I did was live, flag to flag.
Doc, I'm going to finally say this, and don't be mad at me, but the story you just said, it's just one more example of that great book material. Don't be mad at me.
I'm getting closer. What was the name you came up with for the book, Jim?
It was Punchlines and Other Stories from My Career in Broadcasting. Punchlines.
Yeah, I think.
Punchlines.
Yeah, it fits. Yeah, I thought somebody told me I could do Life is the Pits, but then again, that wouldn't cover college football. But life really isn't the pits. Life is a blessing, so I'd have to figure that out. But, yeah, there's so many great stories, you know, that I would love to tell sometime. I absolutely – that's one of the reasons I love coming on with radio with these guys, so we can tell some of those good stories. And thank you for calling each week and being able to ask those great questions.
Well, I appreciate all the info. You guys have a great afternoon. Take care, guys.
Thanks for calling. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, and his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. When we come back with Doc Punch, we'll talk about Formula One race that they have canceled in Russia. They've decided not to reschedule that. We've got other NASCAR stuff to talk about. But if you want to join us, give us a call, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. We're at the Easy Stop in Sevierville, where you can come by and register for the Better Than a Birdie giveaway. We'll actually have the drawing next Thursday. We've also got tickets to Sports Fest. You'll get to see a whole lot of VFLs, current and former, and we've got a lot of panels set for you there. We think that you'll really enjoy it, and we've got a lot of interactive activities for folks as well. So that's going to be June the 4th. So come by and check that out. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you by the good folks at New Balance Knoxville.
Doc, it's the All-Star Race Week at Texas. What are you most looking forward to seeing in a real busy schedule this week?
Yeah, it's a pretty good weekend for race fans, for stock car racing fans to be able to go to Texas. Knowing that the Truck Series runs, the Xfinity cars run, and then, of course, they have the All-Star doubleheader, which is the open cars that will run for 50 total laps trying to get qualified to get in the All-Star race. And then the All-Star race itself is 125 total laps. But the formats are pretty unique this year in that qualifying. And well, let me back up. In the open race, which is the drivers who have not yet qualified to run the All-Star race, these are the stock. There are three segments, 20 laps, 20 laps, and 10 laps. And the winner of each segment, of each stage, will transfer to the All-Star race. That's pretty cool. And that you win your stage, you get to go to the All-Star race. And also, the most popular driver or the driver that wins the most votes, it's a fan vote, it's called. That voting, I think, ends the 20th, which is Friday. So that person will transfer as well. So you could have four drivers from the open transfer into the All-Star race. Right now there are 20 drivers listed in the All-Star race, and the All-Star race eligibility is drivers who have won a points-paying race in 2021 or 2022, previous All-Star race winners who are running the full cup season, and previous series champions who are running the full cup season. So there are 20 drivers available there, and you add the four from the open, you'll have 24 in that race, which this year will have five stages, four stages of 25 laps, 25, 25, and then 50 at the end. But here's the cool part, the qualifying format for the All-Star race. They'll do it in different segments. What they'll do, the stage one for qualifying, they will let them run a single lap of qualifying like normal. And then they'll take the fastest eight of those and they will transfer to a three-round head-to-head elimination. Now, get this. On this next round, they will take these cars two by two, and they will line up side by side on pit road. They will then pull down. There will be a siren or an alert that will go off. They'll pull down for a four-tire stop on pit road, and then at the drop of the jack, with no pit road speed limit, they can fly off pit road around the racetrack, and the first of those two cars back to the start-finish line wins that head-to-head matchup. They will do that until they get down to two and one, and the winner of that qualifying order will get to start fourth, you know, in the final segment of the All-Star race. It's pretty cool that they're doing pit stops in that. And by the way, in between the second and third segment of the All-Star race, there will also be pit stops that will involve the pit crews that'll be determined. That'll determine the starting position. So that's pretty cool as well. So a lot of nice incentives, a lot of unique things for the fans to watch all at Texas Motor Speedway.
Doc, the Formula One race that had been canceled in Russia was coming up in September. They have decided not to run that race. They're only going to have 22 on the schedule, not 23. Does that surprise you at all?
No, I think it's anything that's now being canceled in Russia, you know, has to be for obvious reasons, and you know, travel in and out, and security, and they're talking about, you know, lots of money, lots of very talented people. You don't want to take a chance on someone going in the country and not getting out. Do you trust the people running the race? Do you trust people that are actually operating the event itself? So, you can't run that there. And then the being able to get the track set up and everything depending upon, you know, in police and enforcement and security, how do you trust that? So no, they had no other options but to cancel it.
Well, and I just didn't know if there was another potential site. I guess that was not available for them to reschedule somewhere else.
They probably could have looked at a couple of, but it takes so much time and energy to set up to run a Formula One event, and then because they're so well attended in Europe, you know, hotels, tickets, everything like that, and they probably could have looked at maybe a year from now. They could have looked at one of the other venues in the U.S. But then again, you're dealing with being able to ship, having to ship cars and people, and you know, there's a lot of technology involved, and so I think they're better off to, rather than try to do something. In Formula One, they have a specific protocol they follow to run these races that involve safety. And quite honestly, you're better off, rather than trying to throw something together and take a chance on risking something, to cut your losses and get rid of that one and just run the season as it is.
Doc, I was reading something I thought was kind of interesting. I want to run it by you. These are the NASCAR racers who are involved in the fewest wrecks that cause them to not finish a race. Kevin Harvick, Ty Dillon, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, and Joey Logano. Those are the top five fewest wrecks and leading them to not finish a race. Does any in that group surprise you?
Well, I would say, you know, Joey Logano, because Joey's involved, he just doesn't get – he isn't the one that's wrecked.
Yeah. So but, his percentage might be going up.
and he might be losing that designation, because remember, you know, Joey's an aggressive driver, and in his defense, he says Roger Penske didn't hire me to run second or third, so I'm in there. But I think Joey, you know, we go back to the well documented time when he had a much faster car, and he could have passed Matt Kenseth at Kansas a few years ago. Instead, he bumped him, and Kenseth ends up sliding into the wall and not being able to get in the playoffs. And then the recent issue at Darlington, you know, I think that, you know, I think that with William Byron, I think that situation, you know, Earnhardt got away with it for many, many years, being in frustrated Rusty Wallace, a bump and run. But I think, you know, but they are also were the recipients. I think you're going to see Joey be the recipient of some of that down the road. Kevin Harvick is a smart race car driver. He's an aggressive driver. He's a little bit like an Earnhardt in terms of his aggressiveness, but he's very fair with the people he races. You know, Earnhardt, if someone raced him fair, wheel to wheel, like a Tim Richmond did or other, I don't think he was going to lean on you, like Mark Martin. He's going to try to race you clean. But Ty Dillon, you know, young man that's got all the talent in the world, is trying to take care of his equipment, doesn't have a lot of sponsorship, and it hasn't had over the years until this year. He's just trying to take care of his equipment and get good finishes so he can continue to get from week to week to get to the racetrack. But the Logano thing, because he's so aggressive on the track, but he's also so talented. So, you know, being able to keep his car out of wrecks and be smart early in the race to stay out of trouble, you know, that doesn't surprise me. He's a finisher, which is one of the reasons that he's been so successful and always there at the end of the year to be in the playoffs.
Now, on the flip side of that, Cody Ware has not finished 33% of the races he's entered. He's been knocked out in 22 of 66. Todd Gilliland at 27%. Of course, he's only had 11 races. And then Michael McDowell, 23% of the time when he races, he gets knocked out, 161 of the 404 races that he's entered. And then another guy that's kind of high in that percentage is William Bryan at 15%. Your thoughts on those guys that are getting knocked out at a pretty high percentage?
Well, I think the Cody Ware thing, he's rides for his dad, Rick Ware, and they don't have the sponsorship and the cubic dollars. And so some of the issues they have are because they just don't have what some of the other teams have in terms of, and they're trying to make it work. And I'm not sure if something breaks on the car, they can't afford to use up a car. So they have to call it quits and they have to pull in. You know, the other ones are, you know, just being at the wrong place at the right time. Michael McDowell, the former Daytona 500 winner, he's a very careful, he takes care of his equipment, but sometimes he runs in that area from 9th to 18th where everyone is shuffling with their 2 and 3 wide trying to take a spot or two away, and he gets caught up in bigger crashes, I think. You know, the William Byron thing is just, you know, that's one of the, you know, Hendrick cars that's been so good, and I think he's young, he's aggressive, and he puts himself sometimes in situations that will help him win a race, but also a situation that will help him get caught up in somebody else's wreck. So, you know, he's just had some bad luck at a few events. You know, a lot of it is luck. I mean, you know, it's just like a long fly ball. That, you know, you get a gust of wind, it goes over the fence. If you don't, it's an out, and suddenly you're back in the dugout.
All right, if you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. That's to join Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance again brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist located in the suburban center. And Doc's appearance, he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. We come to you from the Easy Stop in Sevierville. Our special guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, and his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Doc, we were talking earlier about how with the CBS Sports Top 25 poll in basketball, the men's basketball team is the preseason number 10. That's after they signed Julian Phillips, the five-star forward. Your thoughts on Tennessee at this point being a preseason top 10 team in men's basketball?
Well, I love it. I love the fact that the expectations are there. And, obviously there's no bigger fan of Rick Barnes as a person and as a coach than me. A lot of people in town love the guy as a coach, and if you get to know him as a person, as many of us, like you guys have, he's even a better person. But I think being able to bring in these young talents, and then I love the Edwards kid coming in from Catholic. I love what they have, you know, coming back. I think it's a matter of them gelling early. But here again, the key is being able to play. You know, adjust the lineups and move the lineups around, which he did by game 10 or game 11 this year, and found some great combinations that would work. I think the issue is going to be is that the SEC, again, looking at Arkansas and some of the other schools, you know, they're going to be so talented, so good across the board. You know, the SEC's always had a handful of teams that are good in basketball, but it's almost like baseball now where you got, you know, 5, 6, 7 teams that any day could beat anybody else almost in the conference and are ranked in the top 15 or so or top 20 nationally. But I think that's going to be, you know, again, Rick Barnes continuing to build at Tennessee. You lose some key players and a couple transfer, and you continue to rebuild, and he's done such a nice job in recruiting and bringing in people who will fit his system.
Doc, do you think that if you buy the premise, and I think we do, that there's really a good culture at Tennessee in men's basketball? when you have a good culture, is it easier to bring in a handful of players, four, five, or six players, and then blend them together to where they play with better chemistry when you do have the culture that they have built at Tennessee?
John, Jimmy, I don't think there's any question about that. I see teams that bring in incredible five-star talents, but they're all looking at being one and done, and they're all incredibly talented, and they play like a bunch of individuals that are going to be one and done because their eyes are looking beyond the end of the basketball floor. They're looking to next year, whereas with Rick Barnes, they're looking to grow as players and grow, and he's helping them develop their future, and he's telling them, you're going to play at the next level, but here's what you got to do. And I think that last year's a prime example of taking a young, incredibly talented young guard and helping him grow. And it was tough love at times, and you could tell that the other players knew that. But what Rick Barnes was doing was helping him develop into being a better player. And the kid had such a great attitude and was so coachable. I think it worked for both sides. I think that culture where people can come in and embrace and say, okay, hey, glad to have you here. You're incredibly talented. But now you got to work. You got to fit in this system. If you do what you're asked to do and you become a teammate, then we're all going to be successful. And that guy right over there, Rick Barnes, is going to help you grow very, very quickly to be the best you can be. And take a look at these names that have gone on from here that came in here, almost weren't even recruited here, and now are playing in the NBA. So I think that's the proof is in the pudding. They come into that culture, and it's an easy sell for the players that are still on the team there to bring in young talent and help them believe that they're at the right place at the right time with exactly the right coach.
Doc, with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the SEC, there's now sort of a reignited discussion about scheduling formats for the Southeastern Conference with 16 teams, and there's a lot of different versions. Some are thinking about no divisions whatsoever and a three permanent and six other in a nine-game schedule. Also, there's the pod system where it would be a similar three permanent, six other opponents in a year in a nine-game schedule. And then also with two division winners with a 7-2 format, that one would likely take a lot longer, 8 years for you to go through the cycle of playing everybody home and away. And Jimmy and I are probably going to discuss it a little bit later, but I'd love to get your thoughts if there's one that jumps out to you. Maybe you can give me some pointers that I can throw back at Jimmy when we argue about it later.
Well, here's the issue, Vance. Great question. Here's the issue. I argue with myself over what I like and what I think would be a great pod system. I think that, you know, if I'm coaching Tennessee, I want them to schedule, you know, this is not trying to be ugly, but I want them to schedule Vanderbilt three times and Kentucky three times in the same season. That way, then I got six games out of the way. And I got a good shot to win most of those. Not that I win them all, but you know, with this pod system, I love tradition, and I think most fans love tradition. And you want to be able to play the people, and this program is building and developing. You want to play the people that you put that are meaningful. Not that all games aren't meaningful, but meaningful to you. The Alabama, the Georgias, the Florida game. You know, I think that I think that. It's interesting. You want to play the in-state rival, you know. You want to play Vanderbilt, you know, whatever. But I think that for fans being able to, if you're an SEC fan, and I've been blessed to do this numerous times, going to Norman, Oklahoma, is pretty dadgum special, and going to Austin, Texas, if you've never been out there for a football game, that's a must-do. College Station, Texas, A&M. I know a lot of the Tennessee fans went out there and came back and said they've never been treated more hospitable anywhere they've ever been than the folks at the Aggie fans in College Station. We're going to go out there. It's a different atmosphere, but it's a great visit to Austin. And Norman, Oklahoma, man, my goodness, it's unique out there. And Josh Heupel can talk about what it's like to be in Oklahoma. So I think that, you know, I think I would love to be able to see everybody in this conference rotate and be able to play those teams, you know, sooner than later. But then again, you don't want to lose rivalry. So I really don't have a, you know, I don't, you know, part of me likes the quadrant system, and you keep people within a certain area and in play your rivalries outside. Part of me says, let's do 2 9-team divisions. What I don't want to see is division winners who have four losses face somebody else who's unbeaten. I would love to see the two best teams or the two best records play for the SEC championship in respective of quadrants or divisions.
Doc, I want to ask you this one, too, and Vince just showed it to me. Larry Lacewell, a former defensive coordinator at Tennessee, he spent time at Oklahoma. He was at, I think even Arkansas State. He was with the Dallas Cowboys for years. He has passed away. And I wanted to get your thoughts on any memories you have of Larry Lacewell.
I got to see Larry coach and got to visit with Larry at least three places, one of which being Tennessee. And I just remember him being such a gentleman, such a kind, soft-spoken. You know, you don't talk about coaches being soft-spoken, but he was. He coached with, he was like, you can't really hug him on the practice field, but he was a teacher. I remember one legendary coach years ago said, "Coach me, don't cuss me." And that was his mantra. And that's the way he taught his young players in the locker room. And they were behind at halftime. He didn't go in there and scream and yell and say things he shouldn't say. He went in there and taught. And I remember Larry Lacewell as a coach that was such an effective communicator. He looked people in the eyes. He explained to you what went wrong, how it went wrong, why you did it wrong, and how you can fix it the next play. Not next week, but the next play. And I just think he was such an impact coach for players, in my opinion. And I always loved being around him. And I was with him at several different stops and was always a joy to walk out on the field during pregame or at practice. He didn't come up, and give you a big bear hug. So, I loved being around him, and I'm so sad to hear of his passing. But there's a lot of people, I'll be listening right now and around the country, whose lives were touched by him being their coach.
Doc, what's this week look like for you?
Finally get to stay home for a weekend, Jimmy. After being in Darlington last week and in Florida this past week, I get to kick back and hopefully listen to John Wilkerson and the Vols. Play at Mississippi State. No easy place to go down there in Starkville. But, what an impressive performance last night by Tennessee. I got to sit in the stands and watch Tony Vitello march eight different pitchers out. I think eight, Vince, is what he used last night. And I kept waiting for – and then trying to see who else was going to hit. Felt bad for Belmont. I mean, when you consider Belmont leading the OVC with a 16-5 record in conference play, I just felt bad. But, boy, Tennessee really showed their strength on offense and defense last night with some great plays and then some pretty impressive pitching. So, anyway, got to get sit back this week and watch Tennessee and Mississippi State and stay home for a change.
Doc, we appreciate it. Always great to catch up with you, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again next Monday.
Thanks, Doc.
We'll talk to you next Monday, guys. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. They're located in the Suburban Center, and he joined us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.